On this Sunday night, flood fears. With temperatures on the rise, growing anxiety over the threat posed by mountains of snow. And what happens when it starts to melt? New allegations against Bill Cosby from women who say they were victimized, and a man who worked with Cosby claims the actor paid off women. Hooked, America's heroin epidemic. NBC News goes behind enemy lines to trace the source of it. And Blues Brothers, a legendary musician, setting the stage for a young prodigy.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. As we come on the air here on the East Coast tonight, temperatures in the Buffalo, New York area are hovering in the upper 40s, heading into the 60s by tomorrow. Now, after temperatures in the 20s last week, that would normally be welcome news, except there is the matter of all that snow, up to 7 feet in some places, that fell last week. Now, with rain predicted on top of that warm-up, a lot of that snow is turning to water. Tonight, flood warnings are in effect for some local creeks in the area, and communities still digging out worry they will soon be bailing out. NBC's Kristen Dahlgren is there tonight to tell us more. Kristen?
Good evening, Lester. Yeah, they are really getting hit on all sides here. First, they had to deal with things like this roof collapse under the weight of the snow. Now they have to worry about water seeping into their homes, their basements. This is really just a community that's bracing now with temperatures in the, predicted to go up in the forecast.
Near Buffalo today, a race against time and Mother Nature. A scramble to clear roofs and uncover drains before 7 feet of snow melts into even bigger problems.
It is unsettling, unnerving, and I consider myself a very calm, but it's very unnerving because you don't know how high it's going to get.
Michelle Pakula lived through flooding last year. Today, her neighborhood is filled with heavy machinery, scooping up snow by the truckload.
This is where they're bringing all of that snow. So far, they've taken about 80,000 tons off the street. But the problem is, with the rain and warmer temperatures, all of this snow has to go somewhere when it melts.
Waterways are beginning to fill.
If we start flooding, that's going to be an issue.
Buffalo Creek is already a concern to Fire Chief Dave Pangallo.
10 minutes ago, it was free-flowing water, and now look at it.
If the ice and snow jam, the rushing water will go right over the banks. New York's governor says they're ready for that worst-case scenario. Massive pumps are in place with more stockpiled nearby, along with dozens of boats. The National Guard is on hand with cases of water and food. Plows are finally getting through to neighborhoods that have been blocked off for days. Even the Buffalo Bills are still digging out. Calls going out to clear all those seats in time for next week's game.
At this time, we are currently looking for people to help with snow removal out at the stadium.
For some, though, there is no amount of digging that will help. Trace George has already lost his company's workshop.
Two-thirds of the company's over there. This is the last third I got.
Yeah.
After a record-breaking storm that may not be done yet.
Just hope I at least have one building after this is done. To at least still call home. You can get that going. I'll take
my other one. So it could be a tough 24 hours ahead. Those flood warnings remain in effect. Lester, those creeks expected to crest sometime tomorrow.
All right. Kristen Dahlgren tonight, thanks. For more on what they face in the Buffalo area and what's in store for the rest of the country heading into Thanksgiving, let's bring in Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass. Kelly, good evening.
Good evening, Lester. It feels rather balmy in western New York where that snow is melting. And we're also talking about ice jam flooding, not just along the Buffalo Creek, but the Cassonovia Creek as well. Flood warnings remain in effect through 4:15 Monday afternoon. And you can see the temperatures will finally cool down as we head towards Thanksgiving, replacing those rain showers with snow showers. And that will make travel rather difficult in some areas. Tonight, we're also following the severe threat across the southeast. We've already had a report of a tornado moving out of Alabama into Georgia, downing trees and power lines. And here is what it looks like a few days from now when millions of Americans will be traveling on Wednesday. Snow for Chicago and even a rain-snow mix for places like New York, Boston, down towards D.C. Rain and thunderstorms across the southeast as well. So Lester, could be a very busy Wednesday travel day.
All right,
back to you.
Kelly, thank you. Ferguson, Missouri remains on edge tonight as it awaits a decision on whether a police officer will be charged in the shooting death of Michael Brown. And while the mood in the street is tense, tonight questions revolve around a decision that will be made behind closed doors by a 12-member grand jury. NBC's Ron Ellen has our report.
At a church in Ferguson, calls for justice for Michael Brown in anticipation of a grand jury decision whether to indict Officer Darren Wilson. And calls for peace come what may.
Nonviolence is the way. I don't care that other people on the other side of this argument say you need to just go home and stop protesting. We're tired of seeing you protest. This is the way.
With protests now nightly, barriers around the courthouse, and police on high alert throughout the region, the seven men and five women of the grand jury are expected back in session Monday. Nine white, three black, mirroring St. Louis County's demographics. Nine votes needed to agree on a decision. Possible charges range from murder to manslaughter to no charge at all. In a state that legal analysts say gives police more latitude than most to use deadly force, like when making an arrest.
The law is written encompasses a lot of different situations that seem to be at play here in terms of trying to apprehend Michael Brown.
The grand jury is not sequestered, and they are likely very aware the nation is watching.
I feel sorry for these people because they know if they walk out of that grand jury room and have not indicted, they may have created a massive riot in their city and maybe throughout the United States.
The grand jury process itself, now some 3 months long, facing criticism.
It's this issue of transparency. People feel like they're being left out of the process.
Demonstrators demanded the local prosecutor, seen as too close to police, step aside, and Governor Nixon appoint a special prosecutor. Meanwhile, the family at the center of this gives thanks, giving turkeys away in the community that has supported them.
I had to come and just give back to the people that... But everyone is suffering over this.
In an unusual step, prosecutors say they are showing the grand jury every piece of evidence that's available. The question is whether there's probable cause to arrest the officer and charge him with a crime. That's what many of the protesters say they want, and then letting the officer have his day in an open and public court. Lester?
Ron Allen in Ferguson tonight. Thank you. Two other deadly police shootings are receiving attention tonight. In Cleveland, an officer fatally shot a 12-year-old boy who was wielding what turned out to be a fake gun. Police responded to a 911 call that said the boy was pointing a weapon at people, but that it was probably fake. The boy was shot in the torso after he allegedly reached into his waistband for the gun. And in New York, demonstrators took to the streets to protest the shooting death of an innocent, unarmed man at the hands of a rookie NYPD officer. The officer had been patrolling a dimly lit stairwell in a public housing project when it appears his gun accidentally discharged, killing the 28-year-old man. New York's mayor called it a tragic mistake. The allegations continue to mount against Bill Cosby this weekend. More women came forward with stories of sexual assault, and now a man who worked with Cosby is speaking out, claiming the comedian made a history of paying off women. Here's NBC's Joe Fryer.
The latest allegation against Bill Cosby comes from a former NBC Entertainment employee, 90-year-old Frank Scotti. He tells the New York Daily News that Cosby would invite models into his dressing room as he watched the door.
He gave me information regarding a woman who is the owner of the modeling agency. And he said, anytime she called, you do whatever she wants. Reserve the seats. And then bring him back into my dressing room.
Scotty tells the Daily News he never witnessed what happened behind closed doors. He says Cosby asked him to send money to some women, up to $2,000 a month in money orders.
Made me very suspicious because I don't know what it was for, but why would he do that? They could have been friends.
Cosby's attorney tells NBC News, how would Scotty know if a woman was a model or a secretary? It appears that his story is pure speculation so that he can get his 15 minutes of fame. Scotty told NBC News he's not seeking attention but decided to speak out after reading about recent accusers. 23 women have now made allegations against Cosby, 15 of them publicly. Cosby has never been charged with any crimes and has denied allegations in the past.
He put a pill down, said, here, take this. This will make you feel better.
Yeah. Former Playboy playmate Victoria Valentino says she was drugged and sexually assaulted 44 years ago.
The last thing you want is to have your name associated for the rest of your life with a person like this that has demeaned and degraded you. It's mortifying.
Cosby's camp says it is completely illogical that so many people would have said nothing, done nothing, and made no reports to law enforcement. The comic received two standing ovations Friday night during a sold-out show in Florida, but at least seven future performances have been canceled or postponed as more allegations continue to surface. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
The University of Virginia has suspended all fraternities for the rest of the year following allegations of sexual assault at one fraternity. It's the latest in a string of incidents involving Greek life at campuses nationwide. Our report tonight from NBC's Gabe Gutierrez.
On the grounds of the University of Virginia, anger.
And I'm really, really, really furious at the culture of rape and the complete inaction of the administration and the complete complacency of the student body.
Following a detailed article in Rolling Stone magazine describing several claims of assault, including allegations of a brutal gang rape of a first-year student at the Phi Kappa Psi House in 2012.
The administration has been passive, and it's been disappointing.
After suspending all fraternities for the rest of the year, UVA's president is now asking the Charlottesville police to investigate and is calling the allegations appalling.
I think that when I first read the article, I was simply sick to my stomach. We're going to get to the bottom of whatever this is, and we're going to make this a better place.
In May, the federal government announced Title IX investigations of 55 schools, including UVA, for their handling of sexual violence complaints.
Administrators that put the value of the school's reputation above the well-being of women are plentiful in this country. UVA is just one of them.
Nationwide, Greek systems are also under scrutiny after the death of a freshman at a West Virginia University fraternity earlier this month.
Blame the system!
Not the victim!
At UVA, Phi Kappa Psi promises to cooperate with any investigation, saying the acts depicted in the article are beyond unacceptable. They are vile and intolerable. As students post notes of protest at the admissions office, school officials are planning to meet this week to discuss their policies on sexual assault. Policies, these students say, need to change.
Protest is not a yes!
Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News.
We're getting late word tonight of a deadly bus crash in Northern California. One person is dead and at least 30 others are injured after a tour bus ran off the interstate and rolled down an embankment in Pollard Flat. The same bus had been involved in another minor crash earlier in the day. Passengers say the driver appeared fatigued. When NBC Nightly News continues on this Sunday, the growing heroin epidemic in this country and a firsthand look at where the drug is coming from. And later, what does a six-time Grammy Award winner have in common with a high schooler? Turns out, more than you think. We're back now with another report in our series, Hooked, America's Heroin Epidemic, and a look behind enemy lines at where the drug originates. Federal authorities say that while most of the heroin in the United States is produced in Mexico, much of what's consumed along the East Coast comes from Colombia. To learn more, NBC's Mark Potter traveled to the source deep in the Andes Mountains.
To get to the heart of the heroin epidemic, we join the Colombian National Police and the DEA for an armed Black Hawk helicopter ride. We travel deep into the rugged Andes Mountains, 300 miles southwest of Bogota, a remote area heavily patrolled by insurgent guerrillas. We land on a mountaintop. Under heavy guard, we pile out of the chopper, along with four police chiefs and sheriffs from the state of Maryland, who also want to see where the heroin supplies threatening their streets originate.
They destroyed our community. They destroyed and decimated families all up and down the East Coast.
We move carefully on a slippery high-altitude trail under the suspicious eyes of local peasant farmers. Before long, we come upon a stunning sight. A brightly colored heroin poppy field awaiting harvest early next year.
The poppies are grown in small 1 to 4 acre plots like this one high up in the Andes Mountains. We're at about 10,000 feet. Agents say these plots are scattered throughout the region, but are very hard to find.
To make heroin, each of the poppy bulbs is carefully sliced to extract the milky substance known as latex, which is then processed in small homemade labs.
This bumper crop of about 4 acres will produce about a kilo of heroin for you.
The processed Colombian heroin is then smuggled to the U.S., either through Central America and Mexico, or by air and sea routes in the Caribbean, eventually ending up in American cities along the eastern seaboard, including Baltimore.
So you have a bunch of deals going on right now over there.
Here, just outside this drug rehabilitation center, we see what federal agents say is one of many heroin deals going down in broad daylight.
So the deal's done, and they're going in their separate directions.
Authorities say Colombian heroin is destroying neighborhoods here.
We have so much heroin that we're seeing prices at an all-time low and purity levels at an all-time high.
Colombian heroin is also devastating its suburbs and small towns.
We've seen an increase of probably 500 to 600% of heroin addiction here in our county.
So Colombian authorities and the DEA are working together to try to cut off the supply at its knees. But with so many hidden poppy fields in Colombia and rising production in Mexico, the heroin flow fueling the U.S. addiction shows no signs of slowing down. Mark Potter, NBC News, Bogota, Colombia.
When we come back, remembering the colorful and controversial life of a Washington fixture. Former Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry died overnight at the age of 78. Barry had battled a number of health problems over the years, and his personal life was not without its struggles. Nonetheless, Barry was a commanding presence in the nation's capital for decades. NBC's Kristen Welker looks back at his life.
Marion Barry was a Mississippi sharecropper's son, turned civil rights activist, turned politician, who would ultimately be known as Washington's mayor for life. In a colorful and checkered career, Barry served four terms as mayor and served a stint in prison. He struggled with alcohol and drugs and in 1990 was famously arrested in a sting operation in a Washington hotel. Grainy video showed the married mayor lighting a crack pipe in the company of a much younger woman. When FBI agents burst in, he referred to her with an expletive, saying, "She set me up." Barry spent 6 months behind bars, but just a few years later, he made one of the greatest political comebacks, winning a fourth term as mayor. On Meet the Press in 1997, Tim Russert asked Barry if he had beaten his addiction.
God has blessed me to overcome that. You never really ever be free of addiction.
Barry worked briefly in the private sector, but again, politics pulled him back. And in 2004, he easily won a seat in D.C.'s city council, serving until he died. Today, President Obama said he was saddened and hailed Barry's efforts to lift working people out of poverty. Barry once said, "I may not be perfect, but I am perfect for Washington." Kristen Welker, NBC News, Washington.
Up next here tonight, a legendary musician sets the stage for the future of the blues. Finally tonight, it's a cherished American art form, the blues. Born in the South, its songs often tell stories of hard times, hard luck, and hard living. But thanks to a longtime blues legend, the music has a new voice, some new guitar licks, and a very bright future. A future I recently witnessed for myself on stage here in New York.
Quinn Sullivan is singing the blues.
I picked up his guitar at the age of five.
Not about hard times, but about his improbable discovery by one of the greats of blues.
My whole world turned upside down when I first heard the master, Buddy Guy.
Yes, the Buddy Guy. The 78-year-old Chicago guitar legend, and now 15-year-old Quinn's friend and mentor.
After I heard him play and got to know him, I think he might be teaching me now. You know, this kid is playing some stuff. I'm like, how did you learn that at this age?
At first glance, you'd be tempted to call them an odd couple, but your ears quickly tell you otherwise. The relationship began when Quinn was 8 years old and attended a Guy performance with his dad.
I brought my little Squire Fender Strat for him to sign, so he asked me if I could play him like a few notes on the guitar, and
And I did, and then he said, you'd be ready when I call you.
He wasn't nervous at all. That's what made me say, wait a minute, man. You know, I got to let somebody else see you besides who's watching you tonight.
Since he popped up on the Ellen Show at the age of 6, this New Bedford, Massachusetts guitar prodigy has been turning heads.
I started playing when I was like 3, and when I was about 5, I really started to get into it more and started to take lessons more, and it kind of just evolved from there.
Buddy Guy's desire to mentor young musicians is born of his own struggles to make it in the business.
September 25th, 1957.
The date he left home for Chicago with a guitar and big dreams of being discovered.
How close did you come to going, getting back on the train and going back to Louisiana?
One dime. I hadn't eaten 3 days.
It was legendary blues man Muddy Waters who offered him not only food, but a helping hand.
I said, you Muddy Waters, I'm full. And I didn't eat the sandwich. You made me eat it and told me don't even think about going back to Louisiana.
And now, Guy pays it forward.
15 years old!
He produced Quinn's first album and tours with him.
I learn from Buddy every day that I'm with him.
Bookends for the present and future of the blues. Blues alive and well. That's NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. Brian Williams will be here tomorrow. Stay tuned for Football Night in America, followed by the Cowboys versus the Giants. I'm Lester Holt, reporting from New York for all of us here at NBC News. Good night.